Without the Smell of Fire by Walter C. Lanyon. Chapter 25, Revelation. To use an illustration, consciousness is likened to the water in a basin. Manifestation, the cork floating at the level of the water. The raising or lowering of the water level automatically affects the level of the cork. It is something over which the cork has no control. If the water is calm, the cork remains likewise. If the water is agitated, so is the cork, and nothing it can do of itself will change the condition. The cork has no control over the water, its movement, rise or fall. Take the body of man as the cork, and the consciousness of man as the water, and you begin to understand that at no time can man in any way control consciousness, but may express its every whim, register its every mode. No amount of work, either physical or mental, is going to change the relative position of the cork. If it were possible to endow the cork with sight, we should readily understand that the outlook and the elevation of this outlook would depend entirely upon the level of the water. Making a demonstration might be likened to changing the level of the cork by throwing it into the air and imagining that it has momentarily gone to a new level by its own effort. Almost before it has time to take cognizance of the new state of things, it has returned to the former level with a great splash and a great need of readjustment. With all thy getting, get understanding. The first and foremost step in all this is to recognize once and for always the utter impossibility of body, man, doing anything of himself. Cast out of your mind the pseudo-truth that man is a creator, a sub-creator, or a helper of the divine power. Man, manifestation, is of himself entirely without power. Jesus represents man. I can of mine own self do nothing. The cork cannot rise or fall without the water level being changed. The seemingly independent action of man is his erroneous belief that thought can or does do something. All the wisdom derived from thinking is foolishness in the eyes of God. Nothing except belief is changed by thought. All the thought in the world cannot act upon a thing and change it or its nature. Hence, all the knowing and thinking in the world at one time did not make it flat. Yet as far as the majority of people were concerned at that time, it was accepted as flat. However, one glimmer of light and the entire working basis of their lives was swept away. In reality, nothing was changed. Who by taking thought can add one cubit to his stature? If not this, then why try other or more difficult things? Awake, thou that sleepest, and Christ, consciousness, shall give thee light. Nothing can exist to man until he recognizes it. He can recognize only realities. All else is illusion created out of thought substance. When the world, your world, knows poverty, it is real to you as the flat world was to the world in Columbus's time. But that doesn't make it so, for the infinite substance of the presence exists in all its abundance. Yes, all the while you are figuring from the thought elevation, poverty is a very real thing to you and to thousands of other people. At that level, the cork sees exactly what it accepts. This exception is backed up with ample proof that poverty is a reality. Once the consciousness is changed, once the level of water is raised, the outlook of the cork or man is also changed. Whereas before, on that level, I was blind, now, at this new level of consciousness, I can see. It isn't so strange, then, that Jesus counseled "Be still and know that I am God," that the nature of this consciousness be entered into instead of the vacuity of human thinking. Gradually, man stops trying to demonstrate or use or make this power do anything and glimpses the alignment that is to take place. Of course, he cannot approach this in human thinking and reasoning, for it is a lie to human reason. The moment you try to reason God as a reality, you find you have nothing but formulae. When you dissect a body to locate life, you find only death. To think that God can prosper you is to think a lie, for it is not so. Nothing can possibly happen by thinking. When you see something beautiful, you do not have to think it is beautiful in order to make it so. You become conscious of beauty, and then thoughts flow freely from the new recognition that it is beautiful. Thought does not create anything. In its rightful function, thought flows from consciousness. A sick man is usually in a sick world. He knows thousands of other people who are sick and wonders where they came from. He is at that level of consciousness where it is the truth to him, and he sees it everywhere, reads about it, hears of thousands of cases that verify his suffering. At whatever level you stand, human thinking will partake of all of the race consciousness of that degree. Likewise, in the spiritual degree of unfoldment, you partake of all of the blessings that are already yours. The fable of the greedy dog perceiving the reflection of the bone he holds in his mouth and thinking it to be larger than the real bone does exactly what the human thinking does, drops realities and grabs at shadows. Looking at the symbol as reality instead of the consciousness back of its results in the same thing, and man gets the sharp rebuke, "You seek me after the loaves and fishes and cannot find me." You always find a man without loaves and fishes, so when you seek God with the idea of getting something out of him, he suddenly has nothing and becomes a nebulous substance called spirit, which is perfectly helpless to assist you in any way. The belief that you are studying truth in order to learn how to demonstrate things, even health, is a mistake. This wholesale mistake is being shown to the world now. After years of instructions in how to get things, no results are forthcoming. Yet that very power invites you to go in and possess the land and tells you, "Now ask that your joy might be full." All this study of God in order that you may make a financial demonstration is a base deception and will not result in anything but disappointment. Yet in reality, you should seek Him for nothing else but manifestation. Through the beautiful blending of Jesus and Christ, we perceive that Jesus, man, is the place of expression for Christ consciousness, and that over it all is the universal cosmos God. Seeing that this wonderful revelation is given to the child, and that only the child can enter into the kingdom of heaven, takes away all the straining and trying or worrying about the mechanics of it. It is a glorious relaxation when you glimpse even faintly the revelation of consciousness. It will take away all the excitement of trying to make things happen and will judge not from appearances any more, but turn the attention to the consciousness and the magnifying of it. Mary knew this secret perhaps better than any other recorded character when she pondered these things in her heart. She did not think of them in her head. For the moment she tried to think about this impossible thing taking place and was lost in a sea of adverse testimony and hateful situations over which she had no control. But staying on the contemplation in her heart of the presence gave her the consciousness of it all, and the mechanics took care of themselves. The child was born. So will it happen to you when you stop trying to make demonstrations or trying to do things on the outside and turn your attention to the one and only teaching, that of Jesus Christ. Release every person, book, organization, etc. out of your life. The more you can find a thing true in God, the more possible it becomes with you. From the thought basis of man, how can he answer such a question, "Believest thou that I am able to do this unto you?" He has already thought and known it was entirely impossible. Yet here is a question to be answered. In every instance where it was answered in the affirmative, it was productive of results instantly. At first, we may contact this consciousness a little intermittently, as the old human thought rises so easily, but as we ponder these things in our hearts, we shall begin to see also the "before they ask, I will answer," for we shall see, feel from the point of consciousness that it is so and that it is done. Without this faith, it is impossible to please him. The pleasing is merely the alignment with the power which causes it to work out smoothly and naturally. Without the knowledge of the laws of mathematics, it is impossible to work out a problem even though the answer already exists. Do you begin to see the reason for "be still and know that I am God," and how you have entered now into the new lesson, which is so simple and wonderful and yet so difficult because we want to think it out? God's promises are kept, and they are free to all. They offer infinitely more than the best promises of man, and yet because man tries to make these promises true, he fails to function them. "To him that hath shall be given" is not unfair. It is an automatic functioning of consciousness. No person who is still seeking to make isolated demonstrations can expect to gain anything but an intangible sense of the coming and going of good. No sooner does he demonstrate a thing than it begins to go from him, and he has to go back again, and usually the second sign is not forthcoming. Why do you seek to demonstrate God by bits? Why not the whole garment? Why not begin the conscious recognition of the presence in everything and everybody, here, there, and everywhere? You cannot do this through the human thinking, for it is impossible and will only cause confusion and chaos. I go before you and prepare the way. The water rises, the cork rises with it. God goes before to prepare the way, and man functions at that point of recognition. It is wonderful. Chapter 26. How it is done. And he said unto him, "Because thou hast been faithful over a little, thou shalt have authority over 10 cities. The moment man recognizes the presence, he automatically begins what seems to be the human sense increase. In reality, the recognition of the presence is all that is necessary to bring out anything desired. If you can find it possible to God and impossible to yourself, you have set the rudder in perfect position to carry you into the port of fulfillment. Most people, after having set the rudder and not seeing the port the next instant, give up. The rudder sags, and ere long they are miles out of the true course. In the parable of the various servants being left a sum of money to invest and increase, we see the varying degrees of reward coming back to them, and all start with the one point of recognition. So you may increase your recognition until you are made ruler over 10 cities, 10 states of consciousness, all different and all heavenly. Or you may be made ruler over the fulfillment of your own negative words. To the one who had merely kept the talent entrusted to his care came the cursing of futility. Standing in the way of recognition and saying such things as, "Yes, I see, but why doesn't it work?" ends in just this reward. The very questioning in the case answers itself. How can a man possibly see increase? Do you see a plant grow literally? No, you notice that it has happened after the growth has taken place, and yet all the while you are conscious of its actual growing. Unseen in front of your very eyes, this action takes place for you, having eyes see not. If you cannot accept it, it cannot come to pass. For only that which you can accept can possibly be fulfilled. But even this acceptance will not give it a body, for the thing must grow into the full stature. So we find that the recognition is the first step. Before it could possibly happen in any sense of the word, it would have to be recognized as being. The acceptance then brings it a step closer, for now you are at the place where you believe it could happen to you, and no matter what the appearances are, you still accept the fact that it could happen to you. You do not know how, and if you try to find out, you kill the seed. No man knows, not even the Son, but the Father. So, no man with the most highly developed sense can tell how the power is going to work out the situation. Ask no man. So we find first the recognition of the presence by Mary. She was overshadowed with the presence, felt it, recognized it. And then we find her natural doubt about the proposition, even as you and I might doubt the fulfillment of a thing which seemed quite as impossible. Yet eventually we see Mary accepting the idea. She is in a quandary as to how such a thing could take place. But instead of trying to find out, she pondered these things in her heart brain, and did not think about them, she pondered them, mulled them over, became one with them, seemed to touch, sense them as realities, and after this, finding it still impossible, as far as she was concerned, she knew there was only one thing to be done, to glorify and magnify the power. So Mary, after pondering these things, then knew that if it were to take place, it would have to be done by a power entirely above the frail limitations of her human self. By acquainting herself with this power, she knew in her heart that I have a way ye know not of, that the Father consciousness within her had accepted this as possible, and was now in contact with the universal God, and this perfect hookup could and would bring it to pass in a manner, and by a means that no man knew nor could know. Acquaint now thyself, you I am speaking to, you, the reader, and be at peace, thereby all good shall come unto thee. What have you to say about this becoming acquainted with the power? Answer me, you who are constantly seeking things. Here is the way of obtaining all of them. Acquaint now thyself with him, and be at peace, thereby all good shall come unto thee. Do you want more than all? Well, how much more? And do you still try to make this thing work by your human thought, which is even now saying it is impossible? The voice of God speaks a magnificent truth. The thing you are trying to do is quite impossible. Your personality has done everything it possibly could to make it happen. Yet in the face of all this, you can bring it to pass. The impossible thing becomes a reality. Do you see the need of recognizing the presence instead of trying to do something about it? God cannot be operated as a stage character. He is not a man, but a principle, and unless the hookup is correct, there is no chance for him to come into visibility. This sounds very much as if God were under the control of man, but he isn't, any more than the laws of mathematics are under the control of man. Man can only experience them as he becomes one with them. Then he is mathematics in operation, and the more he magnifies this law, the more he can enter into the unanswered, abstruse conditions of life and bring out perfectly astounding results. No one thinks it odd that a man magnifying the law of mathematics can work through unsolvable problems. Without recognition and the acceptance of the law, man could never do the impossible. From the human standpoint, the more he magnifies or contemplates the power of mathematics, the more abstract it becomes until it is sheer relativity. If this is true of mathematics, so is it true of music and art and everything else. It is much more true of the world of spirit. The moment you begin to make the assumption of this truth, it actually becomes a part of you and is not used anymore. This power of recognition brings to light the unseen, embodies it. No matter how long the law of mathematics has existed or how perfect it may be, without man to express it, it is nothing. Man actually becomes one with this law, and thereby is the law, just as Jesus said, "I and my Father are one." Yet he also knew that the Father was greater than I. The more man magnifies the law of mathematics, the more the things called problems become merely equations of life, wholly solvable. Human thought, which has failed to accomplish anything, puts on a cloak of false modesty and says, "Who am I to do such a thing?" The answer is yes. Who are you? The power of God is far removed from all the trivia of human illustrations. God power is so much quicker than human motion, so much more entirely outside of any thought or human contemplation. If you cannot recognize the presence of God here, there, and everywhere, you cannot often meet the situation into which the human thought has thrown you. You cannot see how you can gain the substance needed unless it be by the sweat of your brow. The saying of words or affirmations, the holding of thoughts or clinging to the personality of another, is now proven worthless. "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give thee rest." Do you hear this invitation, you who are worn out trying to demonstrate health, happiness, or money? Do you hear or do you understand what this "me" is, that to which you are to go? It is found in the heart brain, in the place of recognition. That feel which can accept it as possible, even though everything in your outward world testifies to the falsity of it all. Do you begin to sense now that strange thing which happens when you can answer in the affirmative the question, "Believest thou that I am able to do this unto thee?" Do you sense, feel something now that was formerly vague and impossible? Can you recognize with the sense-feel consciousness that if it is possible to God, it has already taken place? Can you come to the place where you accept it as possible to you, even while your human thought is knowing it is utterly impossible? If so, can you magnify the power and ponder these things in your heart and keep silent and let them grow through the slow or rapid processes of the human thinking? Do you hear? Do you understand why the servant was given 10 cities over which to rule, and how the curse fell upon that one who just kept the idea in his mind and did not push his recognition to the place of acceptance and then magnify the power to such an extent that he could proclaim finally, in face of all the adverse testimony, I have gotten a man from the Lord, and then be able to show John his manifestation? Who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? What? A system, an organization, a teacher, lecturer, etc., etc.? Who did hinder you? When will you answer, I hindered myself, because although I recognized this wonderful presence, yet I could not sense feel that it was possible for me, and hence I was cursed with the barrenness of my own words. Nothing is truer than ye shall eat your own words. It is a poor diet when these words have been as negative as most human minds concoct. Can you begin to acquaint now thyself with him and be at peace? Why don't you try it? You have acquainted yourself with the human thought-taking processes and been in the hell of human fury all these years. Now then, nothing worse can happen by acquainting yourself with him and being at peace. And suddenly, ah, miracle of miracles, you are experiencing the revelation. Thereby all good shall come unto you. All good, every bit of it shall come unto you here and now. It is so wonderful and so glorious that now you are walking out on the waters of your old fears and are magnifying the power to such an extent that you are entering in. The secret shell of silence shall hide thee during thy labors until the child is delivered in glory and light, and you proclaim from the housetops of your consciousness, I have gotten a manifestation of the Lord. From glory to glory, it is wonderful. Chapter 27. Beware of pickpockets. My house shall be called of all nations the house of prayer, but you have made it a den of thieves. Today in the temple at Jerusalem, one sees religions bought and sold as any other commodity in the open market. Religion is a business. Prayers are formulae, and lucky charms and amulets are hawked with much avidity. A candle is thrust into your hand and lit for you on entering, and money is demanded fiercely for this gift as you leave. The mumbling of dozens of creeds and rituals and the odor of incense fill the atmosphere. The temple erected to the eternal memory of Jesus Christ. And lo, the signs. Beware of pickpockets. It is not a far cry back to the time of Jesus when he entered the temple and overturned the tables of the money changers and drove forth those who sold doves and oxen. Why make ye my father's house a den of thieves? That it is recognized as a den of thieves is evidenced by the fact that the warnings are posted to protect one against them. Why don't they do something about it? Asked one devotee, who stood aghast at the farce that was going on in the name of Jesus Christ. We keep on asking this question until we suddenly reveal to ourselves why nothing is done about it. Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up. Impossible. It cannot be done. It took years to build it, and you say it can be restored to its perfection in 3 days? But, and the revelation that follows opens the door to why something is not done about it. He spoke of the temple of his body. And the moment we get this clearly in our consciousness, we will see that the cleansing of the temple of the thieves does not refer alone to the material temple. The driving of the money changers and the merchants and thieves from the material temple was only an object lesson for those who had to learn that way. It was merely a dramatization of what must take place in every man. This, however, cannot take place until we realize that the temple is the embodiment of your ideas, which you call a body. When you begin to realize this, you begin the cleansing process, and the money changers and thieves are scourged out of your consciousness. The beliefs in evil which are doing business in your temple, the thief of time, writing his one day nearer the tomb, constantly with a relentless energy, the thief of procrastination, collecting unborn happiness while you wait eternally for the day of joy to arrive, the thief of anxiety, stealing away the peace that passes all understanding, which is a gift to you. All these thieves and many others are suddenly driven from the temple, and it becomes the temple of the living God, filled with light and life. This is the temple of the living God. Your body is that temple, and that light and life are permeating the body, searching the joints and marrow, penetrating the dark crannies and recesses of the mind, and lighting them up with the radiance of the noonday. Down come the smoking lamps of rite and creed, and the odoriferous incense pots. For the light has come, and in the coming of this light there is no place for the thieves to hide. And so the signs of warning, beware of pickpockets, also come down. There is nothing within the temple to attract them, and there is nothing that they can or could take. In the light of this inner Lord, they are found to be shadows of outgrown beliefs. Formerly, confidence men who followed in the wake of a traveling circus, used to announce from the platform that their show was endeavoring to give the people the highest form of entertainment, and also to protect them from all trickery, etc., etc. And for this reason, the bawler asked everybody to beware of pickpockets. At this warning, every spectator casually made sure that his valuables were safe. This was exactly what the accomplices of the bawler wanted to know. It saved them time to see the exact location of a man's valuables, and the rest was comparatively easy. In the very desire to protect himself from the thief, he drew the thief to him, and so it is with all the beliefs from which we suffer. Remember that if there are no signs in your temple, beware of pickpockets. It will not be because there is nothing of value in the temple, but it will be because you have come to the understanding of the presence, which does not permit of this action of dishonesty taking place in your consciousness. There is that hidden in this power which withers the faintest desire to steal. And so the pickpockets or thieves, finding no warning against them as a possible means of entry, pass by. The pickpockets of health and prosperity and joy, and all of these thieves, finding no recognition, fail to enter into the temple. It is wonderful how the light has come through. But if all these pickpockets and thieves and money changers and evildoers are within ourselves, how is it that Jesus could have experienced them? Nothing happens but my love allows, is the answer to this question. Jesus made it quite clear that he had power to release himself from the crucifixion if he so chose. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? Nothing happens but my love allows. So in order to bring out the nothingness of evil in its worst form, he submitted to death. Yes, it is wonderful, because he showed us that even the last enemy could and should be overcome, and that the temple could and should be cleansed of the thieves, and the signs, beware of pickpockets, should be made null and void, of no use as far as we were concerned, for in this temple of the living God there was no place for thieves and no possibility of their getting in. The pure light proceeded from the throne of God, passing through the flesh, resurrects it from the death of beliefs, and makes it a tower of shining luminous light. Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father? Remember how the Master always called attention to the fact that the Father within, He doeth the works, to reassure you that you have the power within yourself, within your own consciousness, within your temple. And when this is roused or awakened, then the thieves of joy, health, prosperity, and those that traffic in prayer or the word of God go scurrying out into the darkness of oblivion. It is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. You are the temple of the living God. Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men. The Lord thy God in the midst of thee, not another, is mighty. It is wonderful when you begin to recognize that you are the temple of the living God, and that out of the temple proceeds the glorious light of freedom and understanding, and from the altar of your being flows the stream of life, crystal, pure, and sparkling, which when a man drinks thereof, he shall never thirst again. And from the hidden recesses comes the hidden manna, dropping down from heaven, and of which a man may eat and live forever. Come without price and eat and drink. The invitation is to you, the starving one, who have been so long out in the material belief world, undernourished with the few grains of wheat you could glean from the husks of life. Come and eat of my body and drink of my blood is the invitation which many pass by, because it seems almost absurd, and at best only a religious wording of an idea. But you begin to understand what it is to partake of this holy meal, the substance of spirit and the inspiration of God. The flesh and blood of spirit seems a strange way of putting it, but it is the glorious substance of things hoped for, and it is the inspiration of the Almighty coursing through you into expression and bringing you freedom from the years of bondage and the terrible scourge of the hard taskmaster, which says, "By the sweat of your brow." If you are still feeding on the bread of material learning and belief, you will have to earn it by the sweat of your brow, under the terrible lash of the human taskmaster, belief in evil. But the invitation stands eternally, and one day you will stop eating the bread that you earn by the sweat of your brow, and begin to partake of the living bread that cometh down from heaven. And remember that heaven is a state of consciousness according to Jesus. The reason we have so long fed upon the bread which we earn by the sweat of our brow, or the bread which your fathers did eat in the wilderness of beliefs of evil, and are dead, is because our temples have been full of thieves, and our best efforts to protect ourselves from the pickpockets proved worthless. The temple must be cleansed. Your temple, not the temple of some other person, whom you believe needs it more than you. Don't be misled by the old fable any longer. Look within and start now the cleaning process. This double-mindedness, believing in good and evil, must go. And how does it go? By fighting evil or hoping to overcome it? No, it disappears in the light of truth, just as shadows are absorbed by light. The contemplation of the light within causes it to become more and more real to you, and this, "Be still and know that I am God," is the very means by which the light is released into expression. It is wonderful. Your body is the temple of the living God, and it is filled with light, and naturally this light proceeds out from it, and quite naturally healing and help take place without the conscious effort to make these things take place. Just as evil has seemed to function in your life when you would have done good now with the coming of this light into the temple, does good begin its automatic functioning into expression? It is wonderful. We begin to see this automatic functioning of the power which operated through Jesus, and how it was that he kept calling our attention to the fact that it is impersonal and impartial and is instantly available to anyone at any place. we begin to understand why it was that the woman who touched the hem of his garment received her light or healing, and how it was that virtue proceeded out of him. The perfect agreement which another makes with the light in you causes this action of spirit to take place, and the world says a healing is made. But in reality, something that has been eternally in existence has been revealed. The Christ is not a teacher. He is a revelator of that finished kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Believest thou this? Ask yourself this question. Do you believe it? Do you think it has to be recreated by any man, any teacher, any system of ideas invented or brought out in these later times? Answer it for yourself. Can you stand up to the question, believest thou this? In the quiet of your soul, ask yourself this question. It is the searchlight, which when turned on to your temple, will expose a whole band of thieves hiding back of the sign that you have erected. Beware of pickpockets. Do you believe the word of God, or would you just like to? Enter into your temple, and with the scourge made of the best light you have gathered, put forth these thieves that are taking from you the priceless heritage. Believest thou this? Do you believe anything you have read thus far? That question must be answered by yourself and for yourself. It is wonderful, this candor and honesty of consciousness that is fearless to stand up to the words and ideas it is saying. Be not afraid, it is I. The noise and confusion of the host of thieves and pickpockets and merchants leaving the temple is nothing to be alarmed about. Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee. It is wonderful to contemplate this golden consciousness, which is even now awaiting your acceptance. You can say within the secret place of your being, I believe in God, and mean it, and feel it, and see it, and experience it in your body, in your universe, in the whole of life. It is wonderful the way this glorious light is streaming from you in all directions, causing the shadows of material beliefs to flee away into nothingness. It is wonderful for you to be still and know that I am God in the midst of thee. It is wonderful for you to be still and watch the coming of this glorious soul into being. The Solomon entering his temple, not made with hands, and releasing the sun into expression, around which moves all the universe. The great flood of light emanating to every part of your temple body, transmuting it into the resurrected substance of which Jesus spoke and which he demonstrated. You, the reader, sitting quietly by, shall experience the glorious baptism of this light, this awakened soul, and your temple shall be cleansed of the thieves, and your body shall be like a well-watered garden, saturated by the life-giving waters and the substance and power of God. There is nothing to worry about when you begin to recognize this presence, and when your consciousness has come to the impersonal, personal willingness of send me, Lord. When you recognize this Solomon in his temple and are willing to do the Father's business, then you have nothing to worry about, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom of heaven, and great is the joy of the awakened soul. It is wonderful. Such a radiant peace and calm come over you. A quietness possesses your soul, an active inactivity, a resting in action, a radiant, vibrating, pulsating life, omnipotent. In quietness and confidence shall be your strength. You shall not need to fight. Set yourselves and see the salvation of the Lord. It is wonderful, Wonderful, wonderful. Bless the Lord, O my soul. Senses. And forget not all his benefits. It is thrilling to contemplate the transformation that is already taking place on the unseen side of your life, because you have renewed your mind. The parasites of belief that have been living on the substance of your thought are destroyed, and all this lovely power is turned into new channels of expression. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits. How can you forget them when you are flooding over with the joy that comes from the light, which is pouring through every nook and cranny of your being? It is wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Blessings, blessings, blessings all about you, here, there, and everywhere. You are a radiant song of joy and gladness, because I came that your joy might be full. I will stand upon my watch to see what he will say unto me. Not what he will say to another, but what he will say to me. He has something to say to you. It is wonderful to contemplate. You are the temple of the living God, filled with light and truth, and virtue is proceeding out of you to all mankind, and in the light of this virtue the kingdom of heaven is revealed. Take down your signs. Beware of pickpockets. There is nothing to fear in all God's kingdom. There is so much of the substance when realized, there is no need for anyone to steal. The automatic action of this newly recognized reliance shows. Chapter 28. The Inspired Presence. The inspiration of the Almighty, when it is come unto you, shall lead you into all things. It leads you straight into the inspired presence, in which the old idea of start, stop, begin, end, ceases to exist, it being a limitation of the manifest world. The inspired presence is eternally in expression. It comprehends no beginning nor ending, as does the manifestation. Things come and go, but the inspired presence in which you live when you are awakened to the divinity within and move and have your being lives and moves and has its being in you. In the mental, unenlightened world, we live on a place of demonstration where a little health is made manifest, subsequently to lapse into sickness, a little wealth followed by limitation. But in the inspired presence to which Jesus was constantly calling attention, there is no coming nor going. The Spirit is constantly in action and in manifestation on the unseen side, and it becomes a never-ending stream of manifestation when man aligns himself with it and gives it a chance to express. Hence, when the statement is made that man is always in his right place, this is true and eternally so, provided he is aligned with the power. There is, then, no getting out of expression or loss of expression. It may change as the infinite impromptu pattern of spirit brings to him a newer and higher flight of manifestation. But from that instant, he can never be in and out of the expression of soul. It is wonderful to contemplate the presence of spirit, the presence of this inspired substance called God, and the escaping from the mental plane of coming and going. Formerly, man thought that by prayer he caused God to come into action, or that he started the power into action. When once he is awakened to the inspired presence, he knows that the start and stop processes of life are gone forever, for there is no place he can go where the inspired presence is not expressing to its fullest. That is why Jesus said, "Take no thought for the journey, the purse, the robe, etc." Knowing that the taking thought was the anxiety and fear that they would not be, nor could not be, made manifest at some distant point. awakened to this presence which is inspired and which leads him into all things, man knows that the moment he aligns himself with the God life, through the recognition of the presence, the invisible manifestation becomes visible, and the inaudible becomes audible. It is impossible to start and stop God, and God is all life is. The old idea of demonstrating a job or a place in which to earn a living gives way and entirely falls into disrepute in face of this marvelous revelation of Jesus the Christ. The jumping from one uncertain demonstration to another, like Eliza in Uncle Tom's Cabin jumping from one block of ice to another in an attempt to reach safety and freedom, is entirely a mental idea of God and does not even approach the constant, ever-manifesting power of the inspired presence. The contemplation of this presence will cause you to see the utter impossibility of being out of place or out of expression. Once his mind is relieved of the burden of trying to make something happen or trying to get into expression, man will relax in the divine activity of finding his expression going on always. He enters in and comes out at pleasure, but the power goes on forever. He may withdraw or retire, so to speak, but the divinity is constantly in expression. The command, "Cast your burden on the Lord," takes on a new and delightful meaning. The terrific effort of holding himself in place subsides, and the inspiration of the Almighty leads him into new and lovely patterns of spirit. Once you are aligned with the power, you cannot stay the endless manifestation and outflowing of the substance. The flowing of the substance through Jesus was no more difficult for 5,000 than it would have been for one. As long as the consciousness is aligned with the presence, the inspiration keeps leading the body into all things. It is wonderful to contemplate the ways of God. His ways are past finding out. No man can designate the precise manner in which the manifestation shall take place, or through which temple it shall come forth. The great secret, "I have a way ye know not of," is the sure and certain way out of any and all difficulties, for it is the way into the inspired presence in which there is no starting or stopping of the power. A constant stream of manifestation goes on always. You are moving in this inspired presence in the midst of thee, of which it is said, "Heaven and earth are full of thee," full of the substance of God, full of the inspired presence, willing and ready to come into expression at the slightest invitation. "Behold, I stand at the door and knock," is but a line of poetry. Until you understand, it is the urge of spirit pressing upon you for expression. The inspired presence seeking a body, seeking embodiment through you. At the place of meeting with the inspired presence, all things are suddenly reversed. Man no more thinks of God as healthy or wealthy, these being terms with which the mental limits life. Life, God, is not rich as man thinks of riches. He is not healthy or well. These limitations will be dropped off with the mental working plane of thinking. In this inspired presence in which you live, move, breathe, and have your being, all of the qualities which you tried to make true by demonstration are part and parcel of the grand whole. The effortlessness of life, the glorious, radiant, untrammeled expression, takes place without pomp or ceremony. In this place of the inspired presence, the only office of man is to accept and let the manifestation take place through him. He finds the inspired memory in the inspired presence, and in this memory is the entire substance of consciousness ready and waiting to be called into action by recognition. The simplicity of this stupendous idea must be as automatic and natural as the coming of dawn. The moment any thought is taken on the subject, it becomes vague and hypothetical and impossible, and it seems to recede into nothingness. If you cannot accept the gift and use it freely, then no amount of begging or beseeching will bring it to pass. The glorious impromptu pattern of the presence causes old beliefs in human destiny with their evil pictures to break up and pass away, and allows the divine destiny to come into instant manifestation. If you be in the Spirit, the inspired presence, you are no more under the curse of the law. Note the word curse. The law of belief, with its hard and fast destiny and its evil path of problems, is the curse which continually operates upon the man who is working with the power instead of coming into alignment with the power and letting it have the same glorious freedom of expression that we see in the record of creation. And the Lord said, let. Whatever he said had to be let into expression, and whatsoever this very Lord speaking within you says must also be let to come forth in its own way and after its own unexpected design. The Lord speaks to your Lord constantly through the means of desire and says, I will give you the desires of your heart. But man will not, because he has a start-stop idea of God. Sometimes he thinks God is an expression, and most of the time not. All this veil of human thinking and dual powers must be eliminated in order that the one presence, the inspired presence, may give you the desires of your heart. Do you believe it is possible for you to have the desires of your heart? Perhaps they have become so distorted and twisted that you do not recognize your desires in their primal purity and beauty and have found none of them possible. When you align yourself with the inspired presence through the recognition of the one here, there, and everywhere, then you will know that the desires fall into manifestation as the pictures fall upon the motion picture screen. There is no conscious effort in the inspired presence. The desires are given you as fast as you are able to take them. It takes a big, free spirit of life to begin to take good. We have so long been schooled in evil and the traditions of misfortune or the necessity of problems for spiritual growth that we are surprised at the simplicity of the inspired presence and continually return to the old cast-off ideas and try to make it work for us. When you begin to feel the presence here, there, and everywhere, you will understand what a glorious thing it is to be in the Spirit. Cast your burdens on the Lord and go free. Do you hear? You, reading this line, are invited to come into the consciousness of the inspired presence, and from that moment you will move in a path of inspiration. This is the way, walk thou in it. Turn to the right, turn to the left. Everywhere you do, everything you say, everywhere you go will the inspiration guide you. I will walk in you and talk in you becomes a fact and is no longer demonstrable in the old way. You have cast the whole burden of thinking your way out of the human intellect on the Lord, and you are going free into expression. You are moving with the inspired presence and are moving into the impromptu patterns of your divine destiny. In this presence, you are free from the curse of the law, no matter how intense or evil it has been. This inspiration of the Almighty coming into you is the life stream passing from the invisible into the visible. It is stepped down, as it were, into visibility. The door has been opened, and he who knocked for admittance is entering into an eternal expression. Do you begin to understand the living, moving, and having your being in the One instead of outside it? The duality of life gives way before this inspiration, and the possibility of the fulfillment of God's promises is seen. Without faith, it is impossible to please him. Sounds like a personal teaching. It is only put in the simplest form to bring it down to the most darkened understanding. It is impossible to please God, allow his power to be released, without the absolute acceptance of this presence, here, there, and everywhere, in hell, in your worst enemy, in the most iniquitous pit conceivable. We are beginning to see what omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient mean. Is God everywhere actually, or is that just a theory you've been following? If he is everywhere, does that mean everywhere to you, or does it mean that God is more present in certain places that man has especially sanctified? If God has been present in the mass of corruption in the tomb of Lazarus, no Lazarus could have come forth. If God had not been present in the tomb of Jesus, crucified as his body was, then no resurrection would have taken place. If God is not found in hell, devil, sickness, death, then these things will persist in their own individual way, living and sustaining themselves by your thought. It is wonderful when we begin to approach this oneness and drop the dual nature of God and man. No wonder Jesus appeared so void of sympathy, knowing that the inspired presence was everywhere, in everything, the lowest sinner and the highest priest. Why should he feel sorry or condone the evil of belief, knowing that the recognition of the presence would instantly shatter the beliefs of evil manifesting as a separate power? You are beginning to move into the inspired presence even now. Yes, are farther into it than you think. The invitations, prove me and see, and enlarge the borders of your tent, are but encouraging words indicating that you can and will eventually recognize this inspired presence and cause the manifestation to come forth in a greater and more glorious form. All the old seeking for the how and the why and the methods of healing fall by the board. Never will the power express twice in the same fashion. The Spirit's infinite variety will take care of that. No two manifestations of God are identical. No set word or affirmation will heal all cases of a given sort. Hence, you see that in coming into alignment with the inspired presence, you discover you have automatically done the right thing, said the right word, and given or withheld for no apparent reason whatsoever. You are beginning to see why you were told to go thou and do likewise, and how the false modesty or fear of the human mind began a series of questions and objections. The former things have passed away. Behold, all things become new, and solely old questioning gives way. You will not be called upon to do anything which you cannot do perfectly if you align yourself with this inspired presence, and the performance of it will be after the manner of inspiration, which will make it definitely original and keep it entirely out of the path of competition, compromise, or opposition. Your expression will be the one and only expression of its kind, not that it may not resemble many others, but it will have that peculiar something about it which causes the world to say success, which is merely the automatic expression of the inspired presence. Do you begin to see what is the height, breadth, width, and majesty of this presence of which Jesus spoke so often? God works in a mysterious way, his wonders to perform. Then why waste any more time trying to find the how of the expression? At a moment you think not, I come. At the moment you align yourself with this presence and drop off the thinking of the how and why, does this inspired expression come into manifestation. Endlessly and without beginning is the power going on. You may have been out of step with it, and hence find yourself in a far country, or you may be sitting at home in the midst of all manifestation, but until you make the gesture, you cannot feel the action of this power. The brother of the prodigal was downcast because of the fatted calf and complained to the father. Son, all that I have is thine. Thou art ever with me. There is no report made that he heard this, because if he had, he would have risen up and given a banquet himself. You are told, all that I have is thine. But that doesn't do anything until you realize that when a thing is offered you, you must take it. Most of us go about complaining of our prodigality or our abundance, never using either one of them. When you arise, you do not have to go anywhere physically, but you certainly do go somewhere in spirit, straight into the alignment of the inspired presence. And the Father, seeing you a long way off, comes towards you. The manifestation instantly begins to come into the picture, and it flows steadily until every empty measure is filled. I like to contemplate this being in the inspired and inspiring presence, that everything you do or say is blessed automatically, and that everyone you contact is blessed automatically, whether he accepts it or not. You shall go in and come out and find pastures. It is wonderful to know that your going in and your coming out, states of consciousness, carry eternal automatic blessings, transmuting everything. When you are doing everything automatically in the name or nature of Jesus Christ, you bring into manifestation the inspired presence, and the Word then becomes flesh and dwells among you. I will recall to you whatsoever I have said unto you. I will recall the forgotten promises and words which you have lost in the plethora of human doings. Do you believe it is all possible, you who read this line? Can you sense this moving in the inspired presence where the power automatically works? My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. The power is always in motion, and when man recognizes this, he stops his puny efforts to make things happen and lets the glorious inspired presence express itself through him. Then he works or carries out the mechanics, disregarding the limitations of the physical law imposed upon him by thought, birth, breeding, education, race, creed, nationality, or any other thing. Behold what manner of love and the Father hath bestowed upon us. Have you beheld this glorious thing called love, which already has been bestowed upon us? Have you felt the presence, and are you sensing this inspiration of the Almighty, which is leading you into all things? It is wonderful dwelling in this inspired presence, with the inspired memory and the never-ending stream of life pouring out more than we ask or think. For in Him we live and move and have our being. And inversely, for in us He lives, moves, and has His being. Oneness, wholeness. Inspired presence here, there, and everywhere. This is the conclusion of Without the Smell of Fire by Walter C. Lanyon.